Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff answering questions emailed to me about Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism. I take questions of general interest, not technical philosophy and not practical politics. I do this every week or two and post it on my website. It's also available on iTunes. If you want to ask me a philosophical question, feel free. Just send it to leonard@peikoff.com. And my last name is Peikoff, P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F as in off. Let's start today with a romantic problem. My partner is a female pilot. She's 27-year-old captain at a commercial airline. All of her co-workers are male. She goes on overnight trips and stays at hotels for a substantial amount of time, and many of these are in exotic romantic locations. I love her, I trust her deeply, but I find myself getting jealous. Is jealousy or envy for the men who get to spend this time with her a proper emotional response? Well, I would say you have a horribly difficult situation. And it's not that uncommon. I've heard it pertaining to, for instance, rock stars who go on the road for months at a time and leave the girlfriend or the wife behind. And it's even worse there because after the performance, there's all the groupies that surround apparently each of the stars and make it only too clear what they want. And there's the suite for the band, and they're all going there. And the man has to have a real commitment and the ability to withstand temptation. And a woman has a great difficulty not being tortured or worried all the time. Now, there's two different issues involved in you being able to deal with this. One, you have to decide, can you deal with the amount of time you're separated per se, even if she wasn't involved with other men at the time. She had some kind of activity she had to perform on the other coast, and she was simply inaccessible for long periods. So your connection would have to all be indirect. It would have to be in terms of phone, email, live computer, video, occasional maybe midway trips, long vacations. You have to ask yourself, is that good enough for you? Is there maybe an end or a limit in sight and she's going to change careers? Or do you find it you're just too alone and I don't want this kind of life? Or do you feel no one else is even possible to me? This woman is irreplaceable. A day, a year is worth more than, a year with somebody else. Now, it is very hard in actual statistics to succeed in a long-term separations like that. Because a good deal of what you want in a relationship requires the physical presence of the loved one. Nobody can make that call for you. You have to weigh how alone you are and how much she means to you. I mean, if she were on the moon, you could say she's irreplaceable, but I have my life I have to live. So you have to say how far and how long. But now, assuming you can live with the time, then the issue is other men. And there the question is, are you 100% convinced that she is exclusively, unshakably in love with you? If you were really convinced of that, then you wouldn't be jealous. You wouldn't fear what she's going to do, nor would you feel any envy, because envy implies they have what I want. But if they don't have it, then your only problem would be frustration that you don't have it. You wouldn't worry about wanting what they already have. But in actual life, it comes down to this question. Can you be 100% convinced of that kind of total, unbreachable commitment from another person? In my experience, it is a very rare thing. I have seen it. Not that people cheat, but that they are so absolutely convinced of their mutual exclusive love that they can bear a long separation without any jealousy or anxiety. There's no way that I know that you can. You can know the answer in a way that will convince you unless you have a long enough relation and you've seen her in so many different kinds of circumstances. You've seen so many different facets of her that you can say, I know her all the way through, and not simply, I see 1, 2, 3 great qualities, she's my love forever. Age is also relevant here. If she's 19, or I guess for pilot she couldn't be, or even 23, you would have to feel some jealousy because she's not set yet. So until you have that kind of knowledge, you're going to unavoidably feel envy and jealousy. And I don't condemn you for it. I don't even know how you could get to the point of saying, I really know X about her that wipes out that as even as a possibility. You can do it. People have done it. It's difficult. And until you do this, I can only say, I pity you. Now, here's a question, completely different. I hear all the time that, quote, it's easy for people to agree, but, quote, the devil is in the details, unquote. What does this mean? Is it true, and why is it so common? It's an excellent question. It would be true in a different meaning than the popular one, only in situations in ordinary life which are highly complex. As, for instance, a legal contract where you can say, I'll buy the book and I'll sell the book, you could say to a publisher. But then I wouldn't say the devil are in the details, but I'd say the details are very important and have to be worked out. So actually, it would not apply. It would not apply in ordinary life because devil implies something bad, something non-normal, something you know, really hard or impossible to deal with, something you know that's an unfair evil suddenly popping up. And today, the reason for the prevalence of this saying is that what they mean is it's easy to utter floating abstractions that have no tie to reality, you know, and agree on everything. We want equal health care, and we want equal justice for all, and we want the prosperity of the community psychologically and physically. But then if you ask them, well, what does this mean? Well, you've seen from the health care, the whole debate, the quote details are like who should be covered and how much coverage and what coverage and who should pay for it. That's the devil. They don't know any of that. So what do they know in advance that they're then trying to find the details of? A completely floating abstraction that does not relate to reality. So no wonder it's the devil's, because since it's formed in a floating way, there is no way to decide. So each of the details themselves become amoral compromises or backdoor deals. Now, so it's a very corrupt statement because it really means that evil in thinking is the need to tie our ideas to reality. Why is there such an upsurge now? Well, if you read the DIM book, which should come out if you're in high school now, sometime before your grandchildren. I discuss a point of view in epistemology, which I call D1, which is not started as a total rejection of concepts in the conceptual level, but as a doubt. And I show why that doubt had to get progressively worse and worse. And we see that, for instance, in literature. Tolstoy was a naturalist. He was what I would call a D1. And very broad abstractions. He dealt with a woman who cheats on her husband, and war, and the consequences. And now that same school has, degenerated down to what one town does in 1923 when there's an oil outbreak. A complete, what I call conceptual shrinkage. And we've reached pretty much the climax of conceptual shrinkage. So when people deal with concepts, as they have to, they're necessarily floating because they only regard very narrow, low-level concepts as legitimate. So, or as tied to reality. So the worse this progression down to narrower and narrower concepts, the more floating abstractions, and then the more problem in relating them. But you read the book and you'll get my whole development of D1 and where it came from and all the steps as to where it's going. Here's another one. I'm 21. I've taken a lot for granted in my life. I've been spoon-fed and given things by my family, and I feel like I haven't really earned anything in my life. Is it objective for me to suffer now and put up with hardships for myself in order to become more independent? Well, in a general case, I would answer this, no, you should certainly not do that. At your age, if your parents are helping to educate you, your concern should be to acquire knowledge and become independent in your thought. You're not yet at the stage that you should be independent in existence, in material existence, in self-sustenance. Of course, if you are, that's fine. But it's perfectly proper for you to take education. The fact that you should be self-supporting is only applicable in the context. It's up to the parents to see that you're capable of doing that by giving you the right education. And your parents here are being generous if you're 21, but that's perfectly legitimate. Now, the idea that you should suffer in order to learn virtue is completely opposite of objectivism. And instead of you learning independence, it's simply going to teach you that virtue, independence, self-sustenance is miserable. This is something you hurt yourself doing. Now, if you are goofing off at school and not getting anything out of it, then yes, quit and suffer. But if you're rational, you have to avoid suffering. You have to learn that thinking and then self-supporting is something you get pleasure from. Something you look forward to when you're own. Not that you are going to pay back your parents by misery. You can't take any virtue out of context. You probably know Kant's idea that if you had a child that you were keeping safe and a kidnapper came to the door and said, "Where is the child?" You have to say two doors on the left because you mustn't lie. Now, that is a bizarre extreme. But for the same reason, you can't say, I have to be independent no matter what the context is. Never pit suffering against virtue. So the only question you could legitimately ask is, well, what time frame is it reasonable for my parents to support me before I'm becoming a parasite? There's a lot of latitude there. It depends what goal you're going after, how much money they have, whether you can do part-time work. But early 20s, to me, is perfectly reasonable. I was supported until I was 23. And I finally, at that point, got a job where I could support myself, and I was given no more money. So I don't think you are 21. Certainly for several years, I wouldn't have any problem and think you should enjoy it and not say it's your duty to suffer. I guess that's what we can do today. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peikoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most famous novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. Thanks for listening.